Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Happy to be back in the studio. I've been doing some meetings this week, which were a lot of fun. Now we've got a pile of Ag PhD mailbag questions here to get to today, but that will be fun. We've first got to get to our topic at hand, high pH soils, and certainly a lot of discussion the last couple of days at our workshops about high pH soils. Many questions from growers. Hey, what are you doing on your high pH soils? What are you seeing other farmers do that can work and can turn the tide here? And it's pretty interesting, a lot of the things that are going on out there. And then a lot of the information that's being shared. I think it's interesting. I talk to growers pretty much every day that say, hey, I read this study or I read that study, and they're contradicting. And how do I sort through that? Hey, I read a lot of the same stuff, and I see, oh, well, this never works. And then the next thing I read, wow, this worked great. And what we've done on our farm is try things. And I know it costs money, it takes time, it can be a big pain in the butt. But you know, if you've got a situation like I have where you have your brother's ground that you can try things on too, that's pretty fun. I'll give you an example when we talk about high pH soils. So we were going to do some work with sulfur and see if we could move the needle downward on the pH scale by putting on elemental sulfur. And Brian was all on board in that, and he's all on board doing high rate. Unfortunately, he used a little too high a rate because we followed some recommendations that didn't necessarily work for our part of the country. They worked in another part of the country from somebody that had tried it, and we found that it was a little different here with our soils and weather and so forth. So we tried something. It didn't work. Well, it worked. It just worked too well and ended up actually lowering our pH so far. We had to put lime back on, and I know we've talked about that a number of times. But the good thing for me is I've got Brian on board where he's generally impatient, and he says, man, we got a problem. Let's fix it right now. Those are good qualities. Let's fix it right now. The downside for him sometimes is he's ready to go to the limit. Now, I think that's a downside, but some other really good farmers around the country have said, no, that's a great thing. Like Kip Cullors, for example, I think he said this on our show too, that you don't know where the edge of the cliff is if you don't go off it. And sometimes you need to go over the edge and go a little beyond what you think you really need to actually figure out what you do need. And at that time, we figured out putting 1,000 pounds of sulfur out was too much for our soils, that we didn't need that much to affect the change that we were wanting to get. And that was taking a pH from 8 down to 6.5. We ended up taking a pH that was 8 down below 5. And so that was cool. It was neat that we could move it. It was just that we didn't need as much rate. So we're doing some more of that work across our farm this year. We targeted some high pH spots that we were going to attack in two ways. First of all, we got into this discussion a little bit last week on the show about drainage and how when we've got poorly drained high pH spots, which we've got a number of them across the farm that we either have addressed or are addressing now, we get the drain tile installed first. And when we get air in the soil, when we get water movement through the soil, all of a sudden we can get the activity that we want out of elemental sulfur, because there is a microbial component there too that's needed to get that sulfur to break down and get working in our soil. So if we've got a waterlogged soil with no drainage, putting elemental sulfur on just doesn't work, and we end up with a rotten egg kind of smell out there and no results. And I've seen plenty of those trials where universities and other companies and even private farmers have tried elemental sulfur and said, man, that didn't work. And I attribute that to somewhat anyway to drainage. The other thing is there's a lot of difference in product. And here's kind of one of the challenges. Now, if you're buying a herbicide, you can say, well, I'm going to buy an HPPD broadleaf killer for my corn, or I'm going to buy dicamba for my corn, or I'm going to buy an ALS herbicide, or I'm going to buy Buctrol. And I've got all these different choices, and they're clearly different. You don't just see a jug that says broadleaf herbicide killer for corn, and everything is considered the same. But with fertilizer, for some reason, we do think everything's the same. Oh, I'm getting elemental sulfur, but I can buy it from five different sources and it's made differently, but it's all elemental sulfur. Yes, but it's going to be tremendously different in the quality that it is. And for our farm, we looked at a number of different sources before we used some elemental sulfur here this fall. And we looked at what solubility was like. We looked at what the particle size was. In other words, how much of it would fit through a 60 mesh screen, how much would fit through a 100 mesh screen. And when we found those very small particles and very high water solubility, we had a product that we liked because we knew we could impact the soil pH in a hurry. And that was one of the things that we were going for, because every spot that we had high pH soil on our farm, we saw a yield hit. And it was sad as we looked across our fields, whenever we had some of these spots that were high pH, we want to fix them right away because we know we can improve yield.
Yeah, but hold up there, Darren. I mean, when you say all spots, high pH alone isn't going to completely kill you, but high pH.
No, there's plenty of farmers that farm in high pH soil areas that are getting really high yields.
It just makes it more challenging.
Yeah, you could get even higher yields if you got that pH in line, because for us, for example, nutrient availability is really restricted once we get in those high pH areas.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, with the crops we're raising, when we start talking corn, soybeans, and we do raise some wheat as well, those crops like the pH in the sixes. So if we're raising alfalfa, 7 pH is just fine. But with these other crops, I'd just as soon have that pH down, especially corn. I think we're seeing a bigger response with corn getting that pH down a little bit more. I'd rather be 6.3 even than 6.8, for example, with corn. So soybeans maybe not quite as much, but with corn, we are absolutely seeing a little bit lower pH is making it easier for us to raise great crops. But again, it can be done in higher pH soils. It's just a little more difficult.
All right, we're talking high pH soils, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD and answering your emails, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. And, you know, we're talking about high pH soils. And I got a question earlier this week at one of our workshops, Brian. And one of the guys is like, he said it jokingly. He's like, man, if you guys help us all get a whole bunch more yield, what are we going to do with all that grain? And I said, Well, that'd be a good problem, wouldn't it? And he just kind of chuckled.
Most people are unwilling to make any changes, though, so I wouldn't get too worried about that.
Well, okay, speak about that. Let's talk about acreage expectations and how much is going into each crop. We got our friend Scott Harms with Grain PhD on with us. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm very good, Brian.
Okay, so the acreage, that's okay. That's okay. Brian appreciates that. When he gets called Darren, he's like, wow, that's awesome. Of course, I'm laughing about that. Okay, so we had meetings over the last few weeks here now with many farmers across the country. And, man, there's a big debate about where acres are going to land. Are they going to land more in corn? Are they going to land, you know, how many acres are going to end up in soybeans? And, you know, I've talked to a number of guys saying, wow, I'm going to have to plant half my crop to soybeans just because of how much it costs to put corn in and how much less it costs to put beans in. And it really throws it off as to where we're going. So what are you hearing?
Yeah, the acreage debate starts way too early, and the analysts, you know, these analysts, they start putting numbers together almost before the combines are put away. But now we're kind of getting into this mode where we are starting to get a little bit of clarity to what the acreage mix might be. Bloomberg did a recent survey, and they basically surveyed 19 different analysts, and they came up with 2019 corn acreage figure around 92 million acres. That's going to be an increase of about 2.5 million acres over last year, so we are going to pick up some corn acres. That's not enough, in my opinion. For soybeans, they're looking for a decline of about 3 million acres from last year, and that would be about 86 million acres. And, corn bean prices are a little lower than they were a year ago when these decisions were being made, and corn prices are about the same as they were when these figures are put out. I think these numbers are being what's being built into the market. You know, price movement over the next month or so will ultimately affect the numbers, and that's ahead of the March 29th acreage report. I think it was Gary Schnitke of the University of Illinois. He published an article recently, and he's arguing that at current prices, it makes a lot more sense to plant beans than corn, as you said. And that's especially the case with the jump we've seen in anhydrous prices since last fall. So it makes that decision even more easy to plant soybeans. So in my opinion, in order for the corn market, in order for the balance sheet to remain stable in corn, we need to pick up about 3 to 4 million acres. And we're just not there yet. So I do look for, this kind of fuels my friendly bias to corn here over the next
year. All right, here comes the bull. Here comes the bull. I love it.
I got the horns, sharpening the horns. Somebody's got to, right?
Well, hey, Scott, one thing I'll throw in, too. I was just talking to a regional rep up in North Dakota and Minnesota this morning, and he said, boy, in his whole region, he's been talking to bankers, and there are a lot of bankers suggesting to farmers, keep your costs down, and in order to do that, put soybeans in the ground rather than plant corn. So that kind of plays into exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that the bankers are going to play a bigger role this year than they've had, in probably the last 5 or 10 years in making those decisions. But if you're in the high-producing corn states, you're still, with the potential upside that you have, the high-yielding corn, especially if you're planting corn after beans, you're still going to have to – it's going to make your upside potential is that much greater in some of the marginal fringe states. Definitely planting beans is going to be a big decision. But it's going to change a lot over what prices do, what kind of development we get on the trade front, because some of these acres are still, a lot of these acres are still in flex because we didn't get a lot of field work done last fall. So I would look for a balance to corn prices. I also think corn could get a boost from a potential trade deal here too.
Yeah, that would be great. There's a lot of questions right now, and that's been a fun thing about doing our workshops and actually kicking off some of them by having the folks at Grain PhD do a little talking to begin things and share some information. And we've gotten so many questions into the mailbag recently. I want to tackle some of those, Scott. And you mentioned the banker having a lot of input, and the best thing you can do is bring them good information. So if you've got questions about marketing or utilizing the GrainBridge software in your operation, submit those questions by going to grainphd.com and find the Ask an Expert tab. All right, our first question comes from Joe in Colorado. He said, I've got some basis contracts in corn that are going to expire in March. And I hate to sell here, but I really don't want to mess with rolling them forward. What are your thoughts on pricing these, and what about re-owning the sales?
Yeah, based on current prices and where we're at, well, relative to our expected trading ranges, you know, this is not a place where we'd want to be giving up inventory. So hopefully we can get a reasonable rally over the next few weeks and you get bailed out on those bushels and you can just get those priced and maybe move on. Otherwise, we would look to go ahead and price those bushels, let that contract play out, and re-own it on paper. And one of the nice things about these dead, quiet markets that we're dealing with right now that largely seem to be going nowhere fast is that option volatility is low. No one thinks it's going to go anywhere, so no one's willing to pay up for options, so that makes them cheaper for those that do want to own them. So with those looking to buy those, there's some real bargains out there. We've been looking at the July 390 calls, you know, that gives you, with July futures at 388, that essentially gives you an at-the-money option and only costs you about 15 cents or $750 a contract, and you get the coverage all the way, you have ownership all the way through late June. So if you were to roll those basis contracts forward to the May contract, for example, you're going to have to pay that 9 cent basis, you know, or give me 9 cent carry, plus any fees that your merchandiser puts on top of that. So, and you're only going to have until midway to get that price. So that's why we would look, be in favor of just letting the contracts go. And if we don't get that price rally that makes you happy in the next few weeks, go ahead and re-own them on paper in futures or options.
All right. Thanks for the question, Joe. I get a question from a grower in Illinois named Wyatt. He said, I've bought some puts and bought some calls in the past, so I understand that a little bit. But I hear people talking about selling calls and selling puts, but I understand that's riskier. What do I need to know about this?
Well, Wyatt, if you've got experience in buying calls and buying puts and you, as part of your overall plan, then you know that there's limited risk. So whatever you pay for that option when you purchase it, that's all you can lose as part of that protection. When you sell an option, you do have unlimited risk. So the exchange is going to ask for you to put up margin money as protection, just like you would if you were to put on a future position. They put a margin, they sign a margin requirement to that. You'll have to fund that. Generally, the margin requirement on short options is significantly less than futures because the risk isn't the same as a futures contract, especially if they're out of the money. A lot of the time, you know, people make an option sale. It's made along with an option purchase to reduce that cost up front. So for downside protection, you may buy a put and then sell a call to finance it. That gives you a price floor, but then you will have to margin that short call options as the market moves higher. Others may look to maybe buy a put and sell a put against it, a lower put out of the money. And in this case, there's no additional margin needed. As the market goes down, the put that you own is going to go up in value more than the put that you sold. So those two will offset. So in those cases, if you buy a put and sell a put, that's a bear put spread, they call it. There won't be any additional cost associated, but you will lose that hedge protection at some point once it gets below your sold option price. So options can be kind of tricky to get a handle on. You really need to get comfortable with it. So, you know, I would suggest find someone to patiently explain it to you so you can, you know what you're doing before you jump in. And certainly if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us at Grain PhD.
Well, I got about a half a minute here, Scott, but I got a grain bridge question from Rick in Wisconsin. He said, I've got separate farms, some that I cash rent. Can I break this out separately in Grain Bridge?
Absolutely. You just get one login, you enter different farms separately, then you also, there'll be a drop-down box to look at the overview of the entire operation. But yeah, you can put in separate farms in there. And if anybody needs any help putting that information, give us 20 minutes at Grain PhD. We'll help you, you know, get started and help you enter some of that information. So just let us know.
And again, that GrainBridge software is just fantastic, and you get it free through Grain PhD. You don't have to spend any money at all. Just go to grainphd.com. You get free information about puts, calls, futures positions, all these things that we were talking about in strategies. You get help from experts, and you also get free software to manage it all called GrainBridge. Scott, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Darren.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and some of the same discussion that we had yesterday at the Ag PhD Secrets of High Yield Fields workshop around high pH soils. And it's interesting, we were planning on talking high pH today, and probably ended up talking a little bit yesterday at the workshop more than even I was thinking we would. But you know, there's a lot of guys that have got pH that's just not in line, and if it's on the high side, that can be a challenge. So we got Danny Titus with us right now with AgriLiquid to help talk through that situation. Danny, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So Western Kansas, Colorado, you guys have some pHs that aren't always perfect. What do you do on the high side to try and help growers through that?
Well, sulfur is a big component that we look at on some of these high pH soils that we have out here. I was just with a customer and we were talking pHs of 7.5 to 8.2. And so we pay a lot of attention to our base saturations and really making sure that we don't have our base saturations out of place. And we look at using sulfur within that program so that we recommend sulfur to help bring that pH down and make things better within the soil.
We've got really high calcium soil. What are you guys fighting in your base saturations that's out of line?
Well, we end up getting our manganese and iron out of whack sometimes. And, you know, we're really paying more attention to the micronutrient side out here on these higher pH soils.
Okay.
We've got a lot of farmers that, you know, they're doing a good job with phosphorus and nitrogen. We're high on potassium, but we're really seeing the micronutrients really playing a more key role in getting us our yield bumps that we're really looking for on these higher pH soils.
That is interesting you say that, Danny, and I totally agree with you. We're talking to a lot of growers around the country that are finding the same thing, but we're also talking to a lot of growers that aren't even measuring their micronutrients on their soil tests. Has that been a challenge in your area, or is that standard practice?
No, it has been a challenge. We usually, as we talk to growers with our retail partners and stuff, we try to explain to the farmer that what really we've got to have those base saturations so that we can really understand what's going on in the soil. We've had situations where, you know, irrigated corn farmer that has really struggled to get over 225 bushel an acre. When you finally take a look at the base saturations and that full complete soil test, you find that there are things out of whack there. And when we bring those back into line, you know, then his lowest yielding corn was over 240. He had corn going up, you know, 270, 275. So it's amazing, by paying attention to those, it is a struggle sometimes to get the farmer to understand that, though.
Yeah, and then, you know, the micronutrients, it's interesting how many fertilizer dealers out there don't really even talk much, other than maybe a blended micronutrient product at a quart or something like that, but not really addressing the bigger issues out there. Like you mentioned, if you've got some guys where the manganese levels are higher than the iron levels, we can see some issues with that in the soil if we don't get that iron level up. And certainly there's a lot of micros that we hear guys focused on, like zinc, for example. But many farmers are just putting a quart of a zinc product out there and kicking the can down the road.
Yes, yes. And, you know, by looking at those base saturations and looking at that complete soil test, we can have a much better understanding so that we can keep things in balance and really help that where we need to be helping it. And it's really working for us out here on these high pH soils.
We see better drought tolerance when you get these micronutrients in balance as well. Are you noticing a difference? I mean, certainly you face some drought in the geography you're in.
Absolutely. You know, some of that has to go back to, you know, you want that plant to be healthy, just like what we are as a human or what we talk about with nutrients for cattle or anything else. We've got to make sure that that plant has the nutrients that it needs, or else we slow down things within that plant, and we can see corn that doesn't finish at the end, won't dry down on us and stuff. And sometimes just making those changes within that fertility program can really help that producer to where that corn is finishing the way that it should be.
Been talking with Danny Titus, who works with AgriLiquid out in the western Kansas and Colorado geography, talking about high pH soils. And Danny, really appreciate the input today. Really appreciate you kind of kicking this discussion off with some micronutrient talk too. I like it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the time.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Got Noah Nelson with us right now with Nelson Ag Drainage up in Minnesota. Noah, how's it going today?
Well, not so bad. Just cleaning up a little snow around here.
Yeah, that'll keep you busy here this next week coming up too, I'm afraid. But did it kick you out of the field? Were you guys already out of the field? The frost was too deep?
Yeah, we didn't get much done last fall either. It was just kind of tough. Been a tough go the last few months here. So
yeah, it's been interesting coming out of last fall with how wet it was and all the ruts that were in the field. And I know we got a nice white blanket over the top, but we got a lot of issues to fix out there. We got some drainage work done on our farm right at the end of the fall. I mean, that was, I remember the discussion. Brian's like, well, we got about 10 things to do, and what's our number one priority? And I don't think we had anybody in the operation that thought it was anything other than getting those drainage problems fixed. And, you know, especially when we've got high pH soils. Is that what you see in your area too? That's kind of the first step?
Yeah. You know, I guess in my opinion, it's one of the only ways that you really don't, instead of band-aiding it, you're actually trying to fix it overall. We've seen tremendous results from tiling high pH ground on our own farm. And I know we got some customers that have seen results too.
You know, the one struggle that I hear from guys, especially in Minnesota where you're at, but in other areas that have some heavier soils, guys say, man, I just don't know that I believe how narrow I need those spacings to be in some of those heavy, high pH spots. How do you have that discussion with growers?
You know, it's a tough sell sometimes, to be honest with you. You know, you get a lot of guys that want to say, well, you know, my neighbor, he did 60-foot spacings, or he did 80-foot spacings, and you know, we try to take every variable into account, KSAT rating, you know, magnesium levels and everything, and it's just, you know, sitting down and trying to explain to them that, hey, you know, we need to do this right, and if we're, you know, we need to at least plan to do it right in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a big key there, Noah, that if you set your plan up where you can always add on, or you could always split the lines, okay, yeah, you don't believe it today, let's just get at least some base levels out there, and then I'll see you in a few years when you want me to split those tile lines.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I had a friend that just put in tile for the first time and had never had to pay for tile before, and of course, you know, it isn't free. And so he did the same thing. He put wide tile lines out there, and he's asked me, what should I be watching for out there? And I said, well, do you see any difference out in the field? And by the time he had waist-high corn, he had about a foot of height difference over where those tile lines were. And he goes, what does that mean? I said, well, that means you need a lot more tile. Don't you want all your corn to look like that? But, you know, the drainage thing is interesting. And normally when Brian gets going on that, he takes up our whole show. So that's why I'm talking with you, Noah. What are some of the key takeaways, I guess, for growers? If they know they get a drainage problem, where do they start?
You know, in all honesty, we take care of a lot of stuff. And I think most custom guys are that way too. You just give them a call, and if you don't really know where to start, just getting a hold of somebody and that, you know, like us, we can help you with permits, anything like that. And just get, you know, you get your permits in order, and we can get a plan, and you can take that plan right to them and say, here's what I want to do. And once you get your permits in order, it's just, just getting time to do it.
Yep, just getting on the schedule, and the sooner the better for those calls. We're going to have to talk to you again as we get towards spring, Noah, because we get a lot of farmers really interested in, okay, how are you guys doing tiling early season in crop? And that's a whole nother discussion. Been talking with Noah Nelson with Nelson Ag Drainage in Minnesota. Noah, thank you so much. Appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you.
We're talking about high pH soils on today's show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold, now, starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
It's Christmas Day here on Ag PhD Radio, and when I say Christmas Day, I mean for Brian, because we're talking about high pH soils. He's been chomping at the bit to attack some of these high pH soils on our farm and talk about it with you about what we're doing and what other farmers are doing that's really working as well.
All right, well, the first thing that I want to say, oh, and to begin with, yeah, Darren says I'm excited about it. It's just, I am excited talking about anything that can help you produce more crop, make more money, use your dollars more efficiently. That is very exciting, I think, and it should be exciting for everybody. Well, anyway, the first thing that I wanted to talk about is don't over-lime. That's something that happened on our own farm. We put too much lime on, didn't put it in exactly the right places because our grids were too big, and we also didn't give the lime enough time to break down. So it all depends on where you're at. If you're in, let's say, Ames, Iowa, and you're looking at Iowa State University information, great. But the problem is if you're in Manitoba and looking at Iowa State University information, and I'm not picking on Iowa State, you look at anybody's information. I'm just saying if you have information that is from a warmer and wetter area, then you have to take that into account. I didn't. It's my own fault. I thought our lime was fully broken down. It wasn't. Even though we had a super fine grade of lime, and according to the charts, it should have broken down a certain amount of time, didn't do that. Continued to break down, continued to raise our pH as we were dumping more lime on, and now we have literally taken some ground that was in the upper fours, low fives, into the mid sevens. Well, that's horrible. So now we're working on getting that fixed. So don't create your own problems by spending money. That's all I'm trying to say. And one of the things you've got to do in order to make this happen and not overspend is you got to do more with soil sampling. Don't take composite samples. A composite sample is a complete waste of time. Now, if you're going to do composite samples, I'd rather have you do nothing. Just put out crop removal, call it good. The other thing is, if you have variable ground, and here's the number one lesson I can tell you from our own firsthand experience and stupidity, is we looked at big grids, okay, in variable ground. If you've got variable ground, where literally we had some spots of, let's call it 5 pH all the way up to 8 pH in the same field. Well, if you've got that in those low pH areas, if let's say you got a 5-acre grid, 10-acre grid, 20-acre zone, whatever it is, don't settle for that. In that area where you say, oh, it looks like I need to tile here, put lime on here, then I would say just in that area, do 1-acre grids. And I know it's work. I know you're going to spend a little more money. But the thing is, it's way better that you do that than you do what we did and screw it up and overspend and now lose 30 to 50 bushels on corn because we've got spots that are too high in pH. It was all just dumb on our part. So I'm trying to help you by telling you about how we screwed up and how we made mistakes. Okay? So that's the first thing. If you've got high pH, let me just stress this to you. It will be way easier for you to raise great crop of corn, soybeans, and wheat. Now, not every crop requires 6's pH. Now, to take that step further, though, there are some crops that want 5's for pH, like potatoes, like blueberries. There are a number of others as well. So look at your crop first, and what does your crop really need? If we're just strictly talking soil health, then I'm going to tell you 6's is right for pH. If we're talking corn, soybeans, and wheat, I'm going to tell you 6's is right for pH. And that's not to say that you can't raise a great crop with 7's for pH or 5's for pH when we're talking corn, soybeans, and wheat. You can. It's just more difficult. It's much more challenging. So anyway, if you want to look at this and say, all right, I got high pH and I want to get my pH down. First, look at why do I have high pH? It's typically five things in our experience. It's poor drainage most commonly. You can fix that with tile. All right, that's typically what we see as we go north of here. In the Red River Valley in North Dakota and Minnesota, there, for example, there are basically every foot needs to be pattern tiled, in my opinion, where we've got these drainage issues. Then, so poor drainage is by far and away number one. Number two is your topsoil's disappeared. If you've got eroded hilltops, side hills, that kind of thing, if you're literally down to the subsoil, yep, it's possible your subsoil might be high in pH. You're going to fix that by building new topsoil. And don't tell me, oh, I can't ever build new topsoil. You absolutely can. We've done it on our farm. And you can do it in your lifetime. So don't listen to all these people that are going to tell you, oh, it'll never happen, and it's going to take 300 years to build an inch of soil. That's ridiculous. That's a bunch of nonsense. You can build new topsoil in 20 years if you want to reduce tillage, plant crops with lots of roots, use manure and use compost, use cover crops, use biologicals. In fact, even in 5 to 10 years, you can build some new topsoil. You can build a fair amount in 20 years, though, if you want to. Okay, the next thing is poor irrigation water. I've talked to a lot of guys about this here just in the last week. I've talked to a lot of people who irrigate, and we start looking at their water quality and go, whoa, you got 7.5, 8, 8.5 pH. What do you think is going to happen over time? If you've got high pH water, you need to either get a new water source or treat that water and get that pH down. Next, high magnesium, and then finally high sodium. Both magnesium and sodium will raise pH much more than calcium. So if you've got super high magnesium levels, and I'm talking over 20-25%, if you've got high levels of sodium, and I'm talking over 1-3%, anything over that, you can expect that your pH is going to rise just because your magnesium or just because your sodium is high. So you got to work on trying to reduce those. It's not going to happen instantly, but try to reduce those over time, and then you are going to get that pH down. In the meantime, while you're fixing any of these things that need to be fixed, just try to do everything possible to raise a good crop. Balance your overall soil nutrients. If you just simply balance your soil nutrients, that's going to help lower your pH, number one. And number two, the more healthy roots that you can produce out in that field, just understand the more organic acids those roots are going to release. Roots naturally are going to kick acid into the soil to try to release plant nutrients. It's just how it works. Okay, well, the more roots you have, the more acid you have. The more acid you have, the more you're going to drop that pH. So that's awesome. And then if you've got good drainage, okay, and I really want to stress that you have to have good drainage first. If you have good drainage and you want to speed any of these things up and lower your pH, you can use some elemental sulfur if you aren't already excess or you don't already have excess sulfur sitting in your field. Elemental sulfur absolutely, without question, will lower your pH if you have good drainage first. The reason why you have to have drainage is because the way this whole process works, the way elemental sulfur converts over to sulfuric acid and lowers your pH is this. Bacteria in the soil are going to convert it. Well, bacteria don't thrive very well when you have poor drainage. Also, part of the process is having oxygen. So if you don't have oxygen in the soil, then it's not going to work either. If you have poor drainage, you won't have oxygen in your soil. So you've got to have the ability to have bacteria thriving in your soil. You've got to have oxygen in your soil. And once you have those two things, your sulfur is going to combine with the bacteria, oxygen, and water, and you're going to have sulfuric acid. If you have poor drainage and you throw elemental sulfur out there, what you might end up forming instead of hydrogen sulfate which is sulfuric acid. You may form hydrogen sulfide and your soil may smell like rotten eggs. That's not good. So I'm just trying to say, you may hear from somebody, oh, elemental sulfur, lower pH. They're right, but there's a caveat. Your drainage must be excellent. Okay, if you don't have excellent drainage, then do not use elemental sulfur. All right, so those are my tips on lowering high pH. And yes, again, I realize I'm pretty passionate about this because we've seen the benefits of this. It's a really big thing for crop production, and it very often can be a really big thing for overall soil health. The healthier your soil, the better chance you have to raise great crops, not just now, but in the future. And here's one last thing that I want to leave you with. If you're serious about trying to get your ground in better condition for the next generation, whether it's your kids or someone else's, but if you're serious about getting that ground in better condition for the next generation, I'd really highly encourage you, if you've got high pH spots in your farm, they're 8, 8.5 pH, work on getting those down before you retire. It will be great in the long run for someone.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with your calls and questions after this.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We take your calls and questions all throughout our show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can send us an email as well, radio at agphd.com. Brian, we talked about ethanol on our television program, and man, we got some feedback. I got from Mark. He said, great job. Great job on your ethanol talk. Your information is exactly correct. Thanks for doing that. Another one came in, great video, completely factual information about ethanol. Again, another one, love what you said about ethanol. Wanted to hear you talk about biodiesel. Why don't you talk more about that on your show as well?
Yep. Well, we could talk about a lot of different things. There are many biofuels that are out there. I know for both Darren and me, we do get excited about ethanol. We do get excited about biodiesel, in part because these are renewable fuels.
And we've been using them for years.
Yes. But then the other side of it is, when you think about renewable fuels, let's also think about just overall safety. Let's put it this way. Can you drink diesel fuel? Darren?
No, not if you want to live.
Right. Can you drink gasoline?
Not if you want to live.
Exactly. Okay. Before they denature the ethanol.
Yes, be careful where you're going with this discussion.
Before they denature the ethanol.
Well, what is it? Yes. Yeah, it's alcohol at that point.
And right.
Yeah, the environmental impact is so much less. The safety is so much better. It's crazy. In fact, Dana wrote in about adding some ethanol into the diesel to get rid of the anti-gelling additives. I don't know anything about that. I'm not a chemist or a fuels expert like that. But
hey, there was one other one. Did you see the one? Somebody was saying something about how ethanol is kind of a joke because it requires more energy than what you get out of it. That's absolute nonsense. There is no possible chance that is true. And, you know, one of the things that I always bring up to people is we were raising all kinds of corn before ethanol even came along. Don't ever forget that there's a good chunk of what goes to ethanol that comes out of the ethanol plant still almost fully intact. The only thing they've taken out is the starch. And then they feed the rest, the dry distiller's grain, to the livestock. So if you want to go back to 100%, all you'd have to do is take some corn residue that's laying out in fields that many guys would be more than happy to get rid of. Now, granted, sure, there's a tiny amount of nutrients that's in there. If you just take a little bit after it's gotten some rain on it and everything, very few nutrients in, but there is a lot of starch, and you could fully replace what you removed. I'm just trying to say, when they pull the starch out of that corn, that's all they're pulling out. The dried distiller's grain is left. That's got all the nutrients. It's got all the vitamins in it, everything else. It's fantastic feed for livestock. So there's a lot of bad information there about ethanol and really about biofuels in general. But the big thing that I guess I want to come back to all the time is, let's not ever forget, it's way safer for people, it's way safer for the environment, it's renewable fuel.
All right, thanks for the feedback. We do appreciate that. Get one from Grant up in Southwest Ontario. He said, we're looking at a rather large investment into grain bins and a dryer on our farm. All things point to this is a great deal, except for the rumors in the marketplace that this just isn't the right time to spend money in ag. What are your thoughts about these kinds of rumors? Should we forget them or should we tread carefully?
It's very rare when, as a farmer, you're going to spend a big amount of money and you're going to say, wow, I'm super happy that I spent a big amount of money. You know what I mean? Whether it's buying land, it's buying a new piece of equipment, it's buying a grain dryer, it's buying a shop. You got to think long term on these things. And I can just give you the firsthand experience on our own farm. So we've got a couple of continuous flow dryers that our dad spent a whole bunch of money on years ago. We're still using those same dryers and they work actually very well. I'm really impressed. The last one we bought was probably 20 years ago. So for Darren and me, we haven't even bought grain dryers. Our dad did, and we're still operating those things, and they're still great and efficient. So I'm just trying to say, you know, the time flies, and I know that for my dad, it was really hard to pull the trigger on the first one. And then when we talked about it and he pulled the trigger on the second one, he's like, come on, guys. But, you know, now it's turned out to be a fantastic deal, and it is so good for our farming operation. Our cost to dry grain down is really inexpensive. And here's one of the things it allows you to do. You can harvest grain a little bit wetter. Many people who are hauling grain right into the elevator, they want to let that grain dry down, that corn dry down to 15, maybe 17%. they have a lot more field loss. I mean, a lot more. Sometimes here on the show, we'll have questions about the hidden yield loss and why a lot of the high yield guys want to harvest grain between 20 and 24%. There's nothing really that hidden about it. Just think of all the little flakes that are coming off the corn, the dust that's coming off, the chips that come out, the little tiny pieces, all that stuff, that's a lot of it. And then the other thing is you're just far more prone when that grain is dry for it to bounce off the header, for it to roll through the combine, for it to fall on the ground before you even get to it. And it's not every year where you have big loss by letting it go to 15 to 17%. But 2017 was one of those years. We had a little bit even on our own farm. I was trying to let grain down, dry down, because it was share rent ground. And so I've tried to help the landlord out by, even though we dry it ourselves, you know, they don't want to pay much for drying costs. So I let the grain sit out there. It was the last field we harvested, and that was the dumbest thing I've ever done. And we probably had 30 bushels sitting on the ground. It's just stupid. And all the stuff we harvested at 20%, like we normally do, we had virtually no field loss. So it's just one of the things that you can think about and one of the advantages to it. But yeah, if you can't afford anything ever, I mean, you got to look at stuff differently. Okay, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying if you're right on the verge of bankruptcy, oh yeah, go invest all this money into a grain drying setup. You got to be able to afford it. But boy, it does really pay off over time. That's been our experience anyway.
All right, thanks for the question and good luck. It's a big decision to make, no doubt about that. Get one from Keith in Northwest Iowa. And Brian, there's a lot of misinformation out there about nitrogen credits from soybeans, but Keith asks about alfalfa. He said, I've got 400 acres rotating corn, soybeans, alfalfa, all fed to dairy cattle.
Yep.
My question is, how much nitrogen will a four-year alfalfa stand release the first year it's planted into corn? I'm getting different opinions from co-ops in my area. One says I don't need to add any nitrogen. Another says to add 100 units. A third says all I need to add is enough to make it until the alfalfa roots start releasing nitrogen. But he just won't give me a straight answer on when exactly that will be. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. I'm coming
well,
out of alfalfa.
Across the board.
Coming out of alfalfa, going into corn, how do I gauge my nitrogen needs?
Okay, if you want to be the most accurate, here's how you do it. First, you test your soil in the fall. Or you could test it this spring if you didn't get a chance to do that. I'm looking for two things. Number one, I'm looking for how much nitrate is there right now. And number two, I'm looking for how much organic matter do you have? Roughly. And it all depends, you know, on where you're at and how much heat you have and moisture and what your soil's like and all those kind of things. But for this farmer in Iowa, I'd figure just to be safe, probably 20 pounds of nitrogen is going to come out of that alfalfa ground per 1% of organic matter. So in other words, if there's 5% organic matter out there now, there's probably going to be about 100 pounds coming available next summer. Plus whatever is sitting in that ground now that doesn't leach out before spring or summer. Okay, so that's what you've got. Are you going to be able to get by with no nitrogen? Well, you can if you want low yield, but I'm going to assume you'd like good yield. So you're almost certainly going to have to add some nitrogen. How much do you need? I don't know exactly. But anyway, when I test in the fall or early spring, I'm going to get a real good estimate. Then I'm going to go along and test again in the summertime right before side dress timing, and I'm going to see what's there, and I'm also going to see kind of what the crop looks like and what my yield goal is based on the weather and how my stand was and everything else, and then I'm going to add more nitrogen at that point. So I'm going to for sure add a little bit at planting time. How much kind of depends on how much I have left in the soil from last year. And then I am for sure going to do some testing in the middle of the summer to see, do I need to add more?
Hey, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Yeah, it's a challenge when you get a lot of information from different sources. And one of the things that we found is if you get information from the right sources, it really can help on the farm. One of the places you can find more information from us and from others that we work with is the new Ag PhD Insider magazine. If you'd like to subscribe, just go to agphdinsider.com. You can find all the details and you can see a little bit about what we're doing with our magazine. Thanks for listening to today's program, and thanks for all the questions that came in. We really appreciate that as well. If you have a question for us, you can catch us any day of the week, just radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening today, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.